especially like to thank them for the opportunity to speak here today and share my work. So today I'm going to talk about a project that I'm working on with Moshe Ghazali, Darren Smith, and Evgeny Sorkin.
So where is he dealing now? Is he in UBC?
He's at UBC, yeah. I think he's about to leave at the end of this month, though. But he's there right now.
To leave, what is he doing?
I'm not sure, actually. Yeah. I just heard that he's almost done. So now, before I begin describing my project, I have to admit that this title isn't quite accurate. So it says stripe phases, but in this project so far, we're really looking for one stripe phase so far, and we haven't quite been successful at finding that. However, it depends heavily on a paper by Donos and Gauntlet that was called Holographic Stripe Phases, and so I wanted to give them credit here. So to motivate this project, I want to mention condensed matter theory a little bit. Whether or not that's a good motivation, I guess we discussed for a while in Toby's talk earlier today. So the particular situation I have in mind is some high-temperature superconductors. And so there have been experiments, actual experiments in the lab, in which certain materials, as you lower the temperature, they exhibit some inhomogeneous phase. So I guess there's charge density waves and stripe density waves. Now, at least some or the reason behind this phenomena, in some cases at least, is believed to be strongly coupled physics. And now being at this conference, our favorite way of looking at strongly coupled physics is using the ADS-CFT correspondence. So in this project, we want to use ADS-CFT to study one of these inhomogeneous phases and see what happens there. So one way that we could do this is to put in the inhomogeneity by hand and explicitly source the stripes. So these people did this in the HHH superconductor. They put a spatially modulated chemical potential on the boundary. And not surprisingly, they came up with superconducting stripes. So the x direction in front is the direction in which the field theory is inhomogeneous. The vertical axis is the expectation value of the operator dual to the scalar field. And the axis going into the page is temperature. So to look at a particular state of this striped superconductor, you take a constant temperature slice, and then you can see the stripes there. But considering our motivation, to try to apply this to some condensed matter experiments, I'd argue that this is kind of cheating and that we'd actually want spontaneous stripes because so we want a system where we just lower the temperature and the stripes appear for us. So
this calculation they did, there was no, this is just in the scalar, is that right? Just in this probe approximation?
Oh yeah, it's just in probe approximation with a scalar and a gauge field. So now there have been studies in which there are spontaneous stripe phases, and a number of these have involved Chern-Simons terms in the dual theory. However, none of these theories here, or none of these studies considered the full nonlinear gravity equations. So an interesting question is, what do these stripes do to the geometry? So what do they do to the gravitational background? So I think we'd like to go past these and include back reaction of the fields on the gravity side.
In these examples, do stripes appear below certain temperature?
Yes. I think so in most of them. I'm not completely familiar with everything that happens, but yes, stripes do appear below a critical temperature.
So as you say, those were kind of in a probe approximation. approximation. And now once you have a stripes and you condensate and you take into account the back reaction, that would suggest that there would be stripes on your horizon as well.
Yes.
So how would you deal with the idea that you're kind of looking for a static geometry where the surface gravity is not
homogeneous vex strings with uniform surface gravity.
Homogeneous.
You see that the image on the boundary stress tensor will be homogeneous, but the horizon itself will be fine.
Right, by the time you go there, all the homogeneity will get smoothed out. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm just saying there's no inconsistency with having a horizon that has a perfectly constant surface gravity and yet seeing, for example, the temperature be inhomogeneous on the boundary.
Right, so would I be able to still do an analytic continuation and think about this geometry in Euclidean? So then the way how I think about temperature after the continuation as a periodicity, I should not be able to think of it anymore. I mean, then, I'm sorry, I just made it basic. I mean, one way I can compute temperature in a static isotropic and homogeneous background is just by going.
But I would say it's not, this is not sort of hydro, so knowing the temperature doesn't tell you. I mean, I think you're working at fixed temperature, but for example, the energy density will vary as you move around. But that's not inconsistent because it's not like you've got some equation that tells you, given the temperature, what the energy density
is. Okay, so you're saying that the temperature will be constant. Okay, so.
Yeah.
So and then
so
that's
surface gravity would be
right. So but then that's
the
length.
The temperature
right.
will
okay.
be constant.
So
but
then
the energy
then it means that the stripes that they see in the geometry near the boundary, by the time they go to the horizon, they will smooth out.
Well, the horizon would be still homogeneous, right?
Yeah.
Well, maybe we should continue this.
Yeah.
Sure. I guess we'll see how the temperature is constant later, but okay. So we would like to include back reaction. So I'd like to go back to our motivation here and add a third item to the list, addressing that. And now I'd like to amend the goal from just looking for a gravity dual of a 2+1 system with stripes to looking for a full back reacted gravity dual of a 2+1 system that has spontaneous stripes. So that's our goal in this project here. And now, to do that, we're going to look at the model that Donos and Gauntlet studied in their paper there. And so here we have ADS gravity, a neutral pseudoscalar field, and a gauge field. And so the scalar field and the gauge field are coupled through the Chern-Simons term, which I mentioned appeared in several studies showing instabilities like this. For this study, for us, this is just a bottom-up model, but Donos and Gauntlet discussed that it has or does appear in certain top-down string theory settings. I guess then you have particular values for the parameters for like C1 over there. So the homogeneous solution to this system is just the usual ADS Reisner-Nordström black hole with time component of the gauge field and zero scalar field. The horizon is at R plus, and we scaled chemical potential to be 1 here. So now, Donos and Gauntlet looked for perturbations around this homogeneous solution. So they looked for perturbations of this form with a GTY component of the metric, AY component of the gauge field, and a scalar field with this particular inhomogeneity. And so they plug these perturbations into the equations of motion and expand them to linear order. And then, like we do in ADS CFT, we can look at the asymptotic expansions of these functions at the boundary The first term in these expansions gives the non-normalizable mode of the field or the source, and the second term gives the normalizable mode. So like I mentioned before, we don't want to source this inhomogeneity. So we want to look for solutions where we make sure we set the sources to be equal to zero. So doing this and solving the ODEs that we get with this fluctuation, Donuts Gauntlet found that we do get a solution with these particular falloffs at a critical temperature that depends on the wave number k. And so as you can see, there's a maximum critical temperature that you can find, about 0.012. And with it, there's a particular wave vector or wave number there. And so our plan is to try and construct full nonlinear mode. And to do that, we'll try to start at that maximum critical temperature, Tmax. And we use that wave number Kc to set the length of our inhomogeneous direction. And then we're going to try and follow that mode and see what happens and construct the full nonlinear thing. And then Donuts Gauntlet also point out that at the next order in the perturbation expansion, GTT component, GXX and GYY components of the metric, and also the time component of the gauge field, pick up an inhomogeneity that has half the period of the first order one there. And that's actually a characteristic that's continues to all orders of the perturbation expansion.
So they only look for zero modes, no time dependence?
Just for zero modes, yeah.
And the transition is second order, right?
Well, they don't actually discuss if there is a phase transitioner. They don't compare it. So I think we don't know, or we don't know if it's.
Solution for high free energy or lower free energy.
They don't discuss that in this paper.
You can't see that in linear perturbations. What the second or third order?
And they haven't done it.
But he didn't think.
So it's like Gibbs's calculation.
Yeah.
But that's lambda squared, right? So in principle, they should be able to address it.
Yeah.
But
it becomes very complicated.
So
Eugene Shulkin did this, right?
For the non-uniform constraint.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Well, Gibbs did this.
Yeah, but I mean, Shulkin.
What's the scale on that? What's the scale of that block? What's the units? What's the physical parameter?
By there, really, I mean K over mu and Tc over mu.
Oh,
so we set mu equals 1, a chemical potential equals 1 from the start. So.
Did you say what Z1, how does it, what does it do at the price? Z1 of all? That's how you behave near the boundary, how do they behave near the horizon?
I'm not sure how Z1 in
okay.
particular behaves near the horizon. They didn't carry out the whole solution to second order in their paper. Or they just did the first order thing. So now we want to extend this to find the full nonlinear thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we start by writing down metric onsets that incorporates the linear analysis there. So we want to build our nonlinear system on top of the Reisner-Nordström black hole. So the F function there is the same F as in the Reisner-Nordström black hole. So that sets the base temperature of our metric. And so we'll use that to set the base temperature to be Tmax. And then the physical temperature is actually depends also on the difference between these functions A and B at the horizon. And so in our onsets, we have 7 fields that we're going to solve for on this rectangular domain. Like I said, the wave number Kc will determine the size of the inhomogeneous direction x. And then we want to solve from the horizon at r plus to infinity. But in practice, we'll cut it off at some finite r max. So then from the linear analysis, we expect the fields W, A, Y, and Psi to have 1/2 period of modulation in the domain, with W and A, Y looking like a sine function and psi looking like a cosine. And then we expect A, B, C, and A, T to have one full period of modulation in our domain here.
Again, it's only in the linearized approximation higher harmonics will show up once you go beyond lambda square.
Yes. But I guess...
You could get lucky. No, you don't.
but the period's always going to be commensurate.
Yeah.
Yeah, there will be multiple. Yeah, we tried something in related model, and so okay, I don't know. This is a different model, so I know that you start.
But they're just picking a box size, and you're letting your function vary. And they're just saying periodic on this scale.
Yeah, if they do numerics, then yeah, full numerics. I'm just saying it would be nice to know. And
it looks like at higher orders. Looked at the linearized analysis to third order. Just took a look, and so it looked like at third order, these functions are. So it looks like they're sourced by the same functions, but they do pick up a higher harmonic. So
cos.
For instance, psi will have a cos x term and a cos 3 x term, and so I guess these boundary conditions are expect it to be okay.
So these are lines of constant W, and is this like in the flow? What do we count for this?
I'm just putting them there to give an expectation for the type of inhomogeneity that we might see here. So right now they don't represent anything except to say that there'll be like half a period of modulation here. So then we have our onsets, and so then we write down our equations of motion. And we can group the non-trivial Einstein equations in this way. So we take these first four, and we can organize them to give second-order elliptic equations of motion for the metric functions. And then the other two are constraint equations in our problem. So by an argument in Wiseman paper, you have if you assume that these four equations are satisfied, then that together with the Bianchi identities implies that the constraint equations here satisfy Laplace's equation on the domain. And so since these quantities satisfy Laplace's equation, we just have to make sure that they're zero at the boundaries, and then they'll be guaranteed to be zero in the interior. So in practice, to solve all these equations, or to solve our system, we'll solve these four Einstein equations together with the equations of motion with particular boundary conditions that will satisfy the constraints on the edges of our domain.
You're going to say something more about the boundary condition?
Or not? I am, yes. So this is an elliptic problem, so the boundary conditions are important. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to talk a bit about them. So at the boundary at infinity, as r goes to infinity, we have fall-off conditions on our fields. In particular, we don't want the non-normalizable mode to show up at all. So for the metric function A, for example, we demand a 1 over r cubed fall-off. At the horizon, at r plus, we have regularity conditions and conditions from the constraints on our functions. So going to this rho coordinate and expanding the equations of motion at the horizon, we get terms that are proportional to 1 over rho squared and 1 over rho. And demanding that those equal 0 give us conditions like this condition on the C function, that its first derivative disappears. And then playing the same game with the constraint equations gives us some other conditions that we want to be satisfied. And one of them is that the difference of A minus B along the horizon has to be constant. And so we can use that to set a Dirichlet condition on the A function. And then we pick up this constant D naught, which actually determines the physical temperature. So the surface gravity, I guess, is constant along the horizon to satisfy this constraint equation.
So could you remind again in the metric where A and U are?
Sure, yeah. So A is like the GTT component, and B is.
Constant surface.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So the reason, that's what I was saying, that the reason X dependence in the function by the time you go to the horizon. It's not quite that it disappears.
Well, I mean, for example, W and C may well have non-trivial X dependence.
Sure.
As,
but
as
that,
a,
as
well,
but because that's
it, does, yeah.
that's not a big deal.
So just to make sure I understand.
Yes.
So the use metric on the horizon is not translationally invariant along the strike direction. But the temperature is constant.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That's.
That's.
And you have gradients in the.
Yeah.
And of course, direction. Of that.
Yeah. So coming back to Alexis.
No, I don't have. That's exactly what.
No, no. But if I were to Euclideanize this, I would see that the Euclidean time circle has constant size along the horizon, but at the boundary it varies. So
it's not zero, but it's
smoothly.
Yeah. So you can. The story is that because A and B, so it's sort of, it's almost like as if you don't have any X dependence on the boundary, you can still end up with
copyrights.
Sure. And then lastly, we impose boundary conditions on either side of our inhomogeneous direction. And so we'll impose either Neumann or Dirichlet conditions depending on the fields. For example, W and AY, which looked like half a period of sine, which we expected to look sort of like half a period of sine, or at least that's what they looked like in the first order in the linearized analysis. We'll put Dirichlet conditions on those at either end, and then Neumann conditions on the rest of the fields. And then we'll finite difference our equations, and we try and solve them using just a simple Gauss-Seidel relaxation technique on there.
What's K? How do you know what?
Yes, that could change. So I guess that's the case of C that we pick there. But presumably, I guess one way to find how that changes could be as we're finding this non-linear mode, we could solve it for different sizes of the inhomogeneous direction and find which one minimizes the free energy. I think could be one way to determine like what that direction will be.
Compute
the boundary stress energy tensor function. Yeah. So we've been working on solving the equations, and we have some preliminary results. So in these pictures, the horizon is coming out of the page at rho equals zero. And going into the page is towards asymptotic infinity. And so the x direction is this inhomogeneous direction. So I've plotted here one of the metric functions b to show that it indeed has one full period of modulation. And then I also have the AY component of the gauge field and psi. And both those have one half period of modulation, like we expected. But I guess we're not confident in our solutions yet, so we don't have very much more to say about them right now.
Again, why would you expect this? Because this is a linearized result, and your amplitude looks big to one half. Well, okay, big on terms of what? What I'm saying is that you're boxing your system to require that there is whatever a single sign in the psi and two period profile. Metric function, and there is no solution like that. The equations do not truncate to the first two harmonics.
No, he's not saying that. I mean, it just happens that they found one that's weakly inhomogeneous, so it looks close to the linear analysis. You just by eye are not going to see the higher modes. I think what you're saying, I'm sure you can just prove that there's a mirror reflection plane for some of the functions, and then it's an odd reflection plane for others. I'm sure you could prove that's consistent in the equations. I'm sure you, yeah, I mean, just an expansion in the x coordinate near the various boundaries, and I'm sure you'll see it's consistent in various fields or various fields even. I think that's all.
And I guess you can extract higher order modes from.
Yeah, you could in principle look at the, yeah, exactly.
And Yeah, and if there is no solution, the method will tell you.
Yeah, that's why, but you it appears you're saying that we're not quite there. What does not quite there mean? I mean, why don't you declare that this is a solution?
Well, I guess, well, we've had some problems, I guess, with the boundary conditions, and we're not sure we understand the boundary conditions completely yet. And so so changing the boundary conditions has given us different results, kind of. So we want to make sure that that we have them right. And I guess I'd be happy to discuss our difficulties in more detail with you after. But yeah, I don't want to get too much into them right now. So then once we do have a solution, once we're sure of it, then things we have to do are, of course, to read off the charges in the field theory, calculate the free energy, determine if this is the dominant phase or not. And then an interesting question might be like about the zero temperature limit of this phase, and maybe that'll be dual to a critical point with some sort of broken symmetry or something like that. Thank you for listening.